This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. This message is a warning.
Everyone, hang on!
Karabast. Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions.
Let's go get him.
All right, if I tag along?
I'm on my mark. Get down!
My name is Rex.
The rebels of the Lothal system. Hunt them down. My gut tells me this is a trap.
Everywhere we go, we run into those guys.
Kenobi!
To defeat an enemy, you must know them.
I'm not afraid.
That's what worries me.
Embrace your destiny.
We are fighting a bigger fight.
He was my master.
Ahsoka, why did you leave? Do you know what I've become?
Yes, master.
And now, here's your host, Aaron Harris.
Well, they say all good things must come to an end. And we've reached that point with Star Wars Rebels. I'm Aaron Harris. I'm your host here at Rebels Reactions. Welcome to our review of the second half of the finale of the series finale of Rebels. If you're looking for the first half, jump over to the Coffee with Kenobi feed. We reviewed the first half of the episode in this awesome crossover with Dan Z from the main show, and of course a bunch of guests there as well. Had an awesome discussion talking about the first half of this finale, and this episode we're picking up the second half of it and running it to the end with all the emotional baggage that comes along with it. So we're not going to waste any time. Joining me for our discussion tonight, of course, the man himself, Dan Z. How you doing, Dan?
I am doing great, Aaron. I am so happy and honored that you asked me to be on. We did the first show back 4 years ago, so it's great. It's great to continue this conversation with you, my friend.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I couldn't think of anybody better to wrap this show up with the final review than the man that did the first one. So it definitely fit. And also joining us is a man who has helped me out since I've taken over this show more times than I can count. Awesome friend of mine, and you know him well, David Modders. David, how are you doing, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing great, Aaron. Good to be on with you, Dan, and looking forward to our conversation here tonight.
Yes, you as well.
All right, so let's go ahead and jump right into it. We just talked about the first half of the finale, of course, the episode of Fool's Hope, and the first part of the actual finale itself, family reunion and farewell, and first part of that. And we discussed everything that happened up until the surrender of Ezra Bridger to Grand Admiral Thrawn. And we're going to pick up from there with this discussion, because everything that happens here, I mean, we have about, from the moment he surrenders on, we have this about 30 minutes of the episode left. And there's so much going on in that 30 minutes. It's absolutely crazy. So let's jump right into it. So we have him surrendering to Grand Admiral Thrawn. He gets aboard the ship, and of course everybody's kind of at a loss, Hera's telling him not to surrender, to come back, get out of, and Hera's, and we see the relationship we talked about with Sabine and Ezra really kick up at this point, because Sabine's like, you know what, we have to trust him. We got to do what we got to do down here. We'll trust him to take care of himself up there. And we see this whole plan begin to hatch. And apparently this is something Ezra has been working on for a while. Dan, once Ezra surrendered, what were your feelings at that point?
I was torn, because, of course, we know Luke is, you know, the only Jedi in the galaxy. And Dave Filoni has said repeatedly that he wants to respect and honor that. And, of course, you should, because that's where it all started. Very, very important. So I was worried for him. I also found myself admiring him so much. I mean, we've seen a lot of his evolution throughout the series And it comes to a head, of course, in this one, as I mentioned in part one of our conversation. But he's brave, and he's not fearless because he knows that it's scary. And I think that makes him more brave. I think, you know, to be afraid is an intelligent thing, but he doesn't let it consume him, because that, of course, would lead to the dark side. And you mentioned Sabine, his connection with her. Clearly, now you said maybe they plan it in advance. I don't think they plan it in advance. I just think she knows him so well, and she just sort of has to let go and trust him.
Definitely understand that. I mean, and by plan in advance, I meant the whole scheme itself is planned in advance, not necessarily him having to surrender to Thrawn.
Oh, sure, sure.
That was definitely a raw maneuver after he opened fire on Lothal. I mean, this was... The Emperor said it best in Return of the Jedi, your overconfidence is your weakness. Or Luke said that, your overconfidence is your weakness. He said that to Luke. And this is Ezra having that same issue. He is overconfident in his position, and Thrawn's like, yeah, no, okay, whatever. You just saved all my troops, because now I'm not killing them when I open fire on your people. So surrender or watch them die. And he proves his resolve. He fires on the city, which is, there's some quite a debate as to, and we talked about this a little bit in the previous episode, as to the character development of Thrawn that would make him fire on civilians, when in the past he's always avoided that in the novel, in the Thrawn novel. Ezra surrenders. We see him on board Thrawn's ship. And what really intrigued me is when he got to Thrawn's ship and he's brought before Thrawn, he's brought into that office, which we've seen many times, beautiful office. And Thrawn is sitting behind the desk, straight up, regal as can be. And his desk is cleared of everything. He's got his little monitor, but then he has the mask sitting on his desk, the Jedi Temple Guard mask, the type of mask Kanan put on after he was blinded on Malachor. Definitely a power play by Thrawn, because I think he knows something about what happened. David, what were your thoughts with Ezra in that meeting with Thrawn at that point?
So many thoughts. You know, as they're talking, you know, I was looking for Ezra to say what he said. Was it during that last little sizzle they did on StarWars.com, you know, before the finale, where you don't deserve Lothal. And that just really struck a chord with me when I heard that. And I got a sense that was coming up in this scene. And then, you know, when they have their conversation, a couple things. One is, you can tell that Thrawn, you know, he says it, you know, strategy is the big thing for him. And he doesn't fully understand this force power. But he thinks he's got, you know, Ezra and the rebels and this whole thing whooped. Of course, at the end of last season, the Bendu fooled him and was quite confusing to him. So I think that continues. But then you see Thrawn say, it's not about, you know, do I deserve Lothal or not? It's just who has the power. And it's those kind of statements that just make me so cheer for our heroes, like Ezra and Hera and the whole crew, just like when Luke was in front of the Emperor in Return of the Jedi. So a really, really interesting conversation between them that sets the stage, again, building the suspense, building the desire that our good guys win.
Excellent, excellent. And it definitely builds a lot of suspense. And Thrawn actually says something very interesting in this, when they're having their conversation. When Ezra tells him, he flies out, tells him, he goes, you don't understand the Force. And Thrawn's like, I don't have to. And then he makes an interesting statement where, I had no intention of utterly destroying Lothal, but now I have no choice. Why do you think Thrawn now feels he has no choice but the total destruction of Lothal at this point?
I think that he sees perhaps there was a glimmer of hope amongst the people and basically what Lothal is about, and he knows that they're never ever going to stop. He's very much a person that studies and knows about cultures and knows about people. And I think he's equal parts intrigued and equal parts over it. You know what I mean? So I think he's just, all right, let's just get rid of this. That we can't have any more of these uprisings. We've got to squelch this right away. Otherwise, it's going to leave a terrible mark on the Empire.
All right. Excellent. Excellent. And it I can definitely see that. I mean, definitely this, by the end of this episode, we see the type of celebrating unparalleled since throughout the series on Lothal. We actually see, you know, what's great about the show is the lights and colors they use to describe things and as part of the setting. And up until this point, Lothal has always been a very dark planet. It's very dirty, very bleak, to say the least, kind of like their future. And by the end of this, I mean, we're seeing blue skies, which is something we haven't seen on Lothal. So definitely he sees a change that's coming that's going to affect everything. Now,
hey, can I jump in, Aaron?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Well, I wanted to refer back to something that Dan hinted at in the Coffee with Kenobi episode, which is, you know, Dan didn't want to give it away, but I loved it, Dan, when you said Thrawn's got something behind him right now, too. And I think of the Emperor just saying to Thrawn while they're on Coruscant, or, you know, in his voice, you know, that he uses wipe them out, all of them, you know, and I could just hear the Emperor saying that as well. So I think, like Dan said, not only erasing this glimmer of hope, but, you know, the Emperor looking to see, hey, you know, are you gonna follow through and erase that glimmer of hope as well? But what do you think, Dan? I thought that was something you were hinting at last time in the last episode, and I thought that was really good.
Well, thank you, sir. No, I think one thing, and you both had talked about this just now, I think Thrawn maybe for the first time feels a bit of a sense of urgency, although he hides it well. But I think we also have a lot of faith in Ezra too, but I think that's kind of where we're seeing some of this coming from, as far as like feeling the presence of, I think, again, you know, he knows what's to come. And as we saw in Zahn's book, the recent book, he likes to do the impossible and just basically hand things to the Emperor on a silver platter without sweating a bit. And this is his coup de grace.
Oh, no, absolutely. Definitely. And one thing I thought I was thinking about, too, is Thrawn's not somebody who's used to failure. Yes, he has setbacks in his plans, but ultimately he's able to overcome those setbacks and still succeed. And with the failure of Governor Price, which cost him his TIE Defender program, and now the rebellion's really taking foothold on Lothal, I think he's beginning to see, you know, I'm losing control here. I could possibly fail. Which is almost, I think, almost would give him a sense of desperation at that point too, which he hides extremely well, because never at once do you see him break a sweat. I mean, I think the most panic he gets is when he tries to call Rukh later in the episode, and he gets up after the shield comes up, the planetary shield, defense shield comes up, and he's like, Rukh, are you there? What's your status? Yeah. There's a slight panic in his voice then, but other than that, he was always been pretty calm, cool, and collected. Now, in this
episode, exactly, which is why this part is just kind of starts to turn up the intrigue, because again, we don't know what's going to happen, Ezra. So there's cost there. We're nervous for him as well. I think it's amazing how the show puts us in the shoes of these characters, where we almost feel what they are feeling when they're feeling it.
Absolutely. And that's what's made this show so successful through the season, is they've made these characters somebody you care about, somebody you feel for. They become your friends almost. And that's a tribute to how these characters are written and how these characters are performed by their voice actors. they become part of your family almost. So it makes final episodes like this even more moving at that point, because you're struggling with, you know, you got that closure, but, you know, it's a loss of family at the same point. Now, we have Ezra, of course, up on the Chimera. And, of course, we have the rest of the crew down on Lothal inside the dome, the Imperial Command Dome, which we found out was a spaceship that they had landed there in the city. So, unfortunately, we see them having to go through, retake part of the dome because Rook has got some troops taking over the shield generators, which I thought was very cool to see the planetary shield generator, because very slightly reminiscent of the shield generator, the way the internal shield generator there on Endor from Return of the Jedi. I liked how they set that up. But if we see them, a big battle ensue at that point, and unfortunately this episode does not end without loss. We wind up seeing in the firefight, we lose one of our clones who made their triumphant return. Gregor gets shot and is lost at that point. And there's a very moving scene between him and Rex where Gregor just is laying there. Rex gets over him. He's like, and Gregor's like, you know what? I'm glad we got to fight for something we believed in. Which, you know, is a very poignant statement, considering these clones were bred to fight for the Republic, whether they believed in it or not. That was what they were bred for. But this, they had the option to fight, and this was their choice. David, what were your thoughts when Gregor made that statement as some of his dying words?
Well, you know, I mentioned it the last time I was on, two episodes ago of Rebels Reactions, that I am very easy to cry, and I'm not afraid to say it. And this show brings a lot of feels. So my first reaction when I'm seeing that is, you know, I've got the feels and I'm tearing up. It also does really make me think about the Clone Wars episodes where Fives is trying to figure out that whole issue of, you know, what are we fighting for and what's going on and do we have something, you know, an organic chip in our head or not. And it's so neat to hear, you know, Gregor say that here's three of us clones without chips in our head, actually making decisions that we want to make and fighting for the right thing. And so again, here's Dave Filoni, you know, tying this in to previous work very seamlessly. So those are just a few of my thoughts. Gave me the feels, made me think about Clone Wars, a lot of episodes of Clone Wars, and it also made me think about Gregor surviving that big explosion in that episode with Meeber Gascon. So, excellent, excellent.
Well said, David. I mean, with Star Wars, I mean, we get so much feels involved in that, and seeing this particular Gregor fall at this point, and it definitely was moving, and almost, you know, the exact opposite of when we see Hondo's little friend Melch get shot, and Hondo thinks he's dead at that point, but he winds up being absolutely fine, and Hondo's, you know, Hondo's fine at that point. But it definitely is, there's a play of emotions throughout this episode. Now we see Zeb go one-on-one again with Rook, which ultimately winds up with Rook's demise. I'm not sure. I think this is the one part I was not too keen on with how Rook died. Dan, I know you were a fan of the book.
Tell me why.
To me, it was just, I don't know. I figured, you know, just having him, his foot trapped inside one of the I don't know. To me, it seemed cheap, a cheap escape at that point. I don't know. Having him electrocuted by the shield generator, for somebody who was, you know, plagued our crew for the last several episodes since he made his appearance. Even though he almost got, you know, beat to a pulp. Well, he did get beat to a pulp by Zeb, earlier in a previous episode, but I think, I don't know. I just found it unsatisfying. If you could say somebody's death is unsatisfying.
It's no different than Boba Fett, right? In 1983, when
exactly.
He just kind of falls in there. And yeah, no, I got that too. I thought, oh, is he finally gone this time? Because it's not the first time he's been thrown off some sort of a ravine and he seems to come back. Maybe more disturbing is Zeb's almost glee at his demise.
Oh, that was, that was kind of odd too. Because I mentioned when Thrawn called looking for him when the shield came up, Rook, what's your status? And Zeb comes on, he's like, hey, you'll have to call him back later. Then the generator comes to full strength. He's like, yeah, well, never mind. You don't want to call him. I mean, it was very, you know, it was very cold. somewhat disrespectful. I come at. I mean, it felt more like something they would have done after he would have beat him to a pulp than if he'd have died at that point rather than this way. It just, I don't know. I just didn't like the feel to it.
No, I agree.
So, definitely left me wanting at that point. Now
it's not like I wanted. I mean, Rook, you know, he's really one of the few characters that actually dies in this episode. But because in some way, I mean, it just has to be that way for there to be any kind of real emotional weight to the piece. But you know, I know what you're saying. Totally know what you're saying. I agree.
Well. And we get there's a lot of emotional weight in this piece, and especially going into the next part of the episode, because there's a huge weight at this point and a huge emotional piece that we deal with, where Thrawn actually takes Ezra before Palpatine, and it's of course a holographic Palpatine. He's not actually there. He's still on Coruscant, but it's a holographic version of Palpatine. But it's not Emperor Palpatine. It's almost like Revenge of the Sith prior to the fight.
Grandpa Palpatine.
It's Grandpa Palps is what it is. I mean, he's young. He's not deformed. He's got brown hair. I mean, he looks young and put together. He looks more like a kind older gentleman per se than the evil emperor of the universe, galaxy, which makes it very difficult, you know, to put that together. When you first saw him like that, what did you think, Dan?
I thought, oh boy, this just got serious, because it's like, you know, the ultimate predator does something to make itself look pleasant and appealing, and then you swim up or walk up to see what's going on, and then boom, they get you. And that was what was going on, and I was very, very happy that Ian McDiarmid was still voicing him, which I pretty much expected considering what happened, you know, through A World Between Worlds. But I thought this was the most I've ever been concerned for Ezra's safety, because, I mean, the Emperor... Obviously, there's a rumor that he doesn't like the Jedi, so I was really concerned for Ezra.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he doesn't like the Jedi, but, you know, after the last episode we reviewed last week, A World Between Worlds, we see Palpatine, he wants Ezra. Ezra's found a way to get into that World Between Worlds, and that's what Palpatine wants. He wants that.
And you can't help but think, oh, is he even toying with the minute possibility that he could get Ezra to replace Vader? Because you know how the Sith are. They're always trying to one-up themselves. That kind of crossed my mind a little bit as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, in the movie. I mean, he even says he's after, I mean, it's ultimate power. That's what he's won. And world between the, that world between world with the portals and everything, that gives him that ultimate power that he wants. I mean, he controls, he would control everything at that point. There would be, you know, it'd be unstoppable. And so, of course, he's using his younger form to try to influence Ezra in this scene by trying to give him something he knows he wants. He overheard Ezra say in that previous episode, you know, sometimes I wish all of this wasn't happening. I wish I could see my parents again. I wish I was with them. And none of this was happening. So Palpatine gives him that opportunity. We see the portions that were cut out of the old Jedi temple on Lothal pieced together there on the Chimera. That's where they meet. And he goes in and at the end of the hallway, there's a portal. And on the other side of the portal, there's his parents. David, what were your thoughts on seeing his parents and him having that opportunity, and what Ezra had to wrestle with at that moment?
Yeah. And this is, kind of riffing off of what Dan just said. One of the things that's striking me as I'm watching this is like, how are things packaged? You know, like, you guys know that I like to bring psychology into this periodically. And one of the things I'm thinking about as Ezra is facing this is that, you know, for 26 years as a psychologist, I talk to people, like, let me just give you the order of ways that people are told they can cope in our culture. So like one is, you know, alcohol, marijuana, pornography, gambling, food, sports, shopping, prescription medications, and cigarettes. So for 26 years, I've talked to clients about that very order of things. And one of the things I tell my clients is when these things are presented to you, they're all packaged really, I always say, nicey nice. And this is what I'm thinking about when I'm watching Ezra. You know, the Emperor is packaging this super nice. You know, he doesn't show you all the problems behind it, right? The effects of cigarette smoking or the effects of gambling or drinking too much alcohol. And so he does such a wonderful job of packaging this with the most enticing thing possible, which is, you know, having his mom and dad back. And then one of the processes I think about is I was thinking about Jedi trials. I was thinking about tests, and I was thinking about his ability to resist this temptation. And you could see the whole way through, he was maturing and his work underneath, while hearing Yoda and hearing Kanan and so on and so forth, helped him to ultimately make the right decision and resist that temptation to give into that.
Very good. Very good. Definitely it's a huge temptation for him. And we do see him resist it. He winds up telling his parents he has to let go of them. He loves them, but he has to let go. He's got to let them go. And when he does that, he destroys the temple and or that portion of the temple, of course, which infuriates Palpatine. And if you see the transition of the hologram from Grandpa Palpy to Emperor Palpatine, Ian McDermott's incredible being able to switch it off and on just like that, from his normal emperor or chancellor voice to that Sith Lord voice. He just switches it like that, which was phenomenal. But there's still a lot to cover in this episode, and we're got a lot to deal with. So we're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and then we will be right back to continue talking about the series finale of Star Wars Rebels. All right, we're back. Thank you for your patience. We're back with Dan Z and David Motters talking the season finale of Star Wars Rebels. Of course, the first half you heard on Coffee with Kenobi. This is the second half. A lot to cover still in this episode. We see, after the destruction of the temple, we get to see the Imperial Emperor, the Red Guards, the Imperial Guards come in. And these are more of a cross between the Praetorian Guards we see in Last Jedi and the Imperial Guards we see in Return of the Jedi, which I thought was a nice mix. What were your thoughts on seeing those guys actually in action this time, Dan?
I thought that was fascinating. I was hoping and praying that on Rebels Recon they were going to not only talk about these characters, but whatever their force pikes were, that was something we hadn't seen before, their ability to sort of levitate or to hold him in sort of a stasis, similar to what Snoke does. And maybe there's sort of a connection there as far as, you know, Praetorian Guards, Snoke. Obviously, that's the thing. And I'm not saying anyone in Rebels is Snoke, because I don't think that at all. I think Snoke is Snoke. That's it. End of that conversation. But I loved it. I thought it was cool. I always like when I see the new armor in any way, shape, or form. And I find myself thinking, are these like the elite of the elite Royal Guards? Because the Royal Guards are already pretty elite as it is.
Yeah, exactly. I was wondering that about myself, because, I mean, every Royal Guard we saw in Return of the Jedi, I mean, they don't move. I mean, they just kind of stand there. Even when we see them in Revenge of the Sith, Yoda walks in, they basically, all they do is turn and look down at him, and then he knocks them out. I mean, there's no action for these guys. So seeing these guys move like this was just, I mean, it was mind-blowing to see them in action at that point. Now, we need to get to the climax here, because we have, once, you know, of course, Roke escapes, escapes the rebel base and gets it back to the base, and we know what happens there. But we have Visago, we have
Mart Madden, yeah. I was glad that Mart survived, by the way.
Yes,
I was thinking about Matt, like, dude, I wonder how you're feeling these days.
It would tell you a lot about how Filoni field for you if he actually killed off your character. But no, Mart survives, and Visago's with them, and you know, Wolf is there, and they when they realize that things are going bad, Thrawn's being warned, Mart's like, you know what? We got a secret mission from Ezra. We have to go do this real quick. They go into a high orbit, broadcast a signal, and then all of a sudden Thrawn's crew is like, you know what? We have incoming. We've lost contact with the crew, with our ships in orbit. Something's going, and now we have incoming, which, by the way, real quick, I love the fact that when Thrawn talked to the ships in orbit and talked about how they were out, they just came out of hyperspace and they're intact. He was talking to Pelion, which of course was his officer in the commanding officer of the Chimera in the actual original Thrawn novels, which I absolutely love that. I don't know if any of y'all caught
that. Oh, yeah, that's right. Good call. Yeah. That's awesome. I knew I heard that name and I thought it must have been somewhere in Clone Wars. No, that's great.
Yeah, yeah, it was perfect. I absolutely love that they brought him in finally here at the end. Which just amplified that at this point. And we have all of a sudden Ezra comes onto the bridge of the Chimera. He has escaped those Imperial Guards. And he's basically just, you know, him and Thrawn and a blaster at this point. And the crew's like, you know, we got incoming. And Ezra's like, take a look. Thrawn turns around, takes a look, and what do we see, folks? Purrgils.
Unbelievable.
A whole mess of them.
A whole mess of Purrgils.
Gorgeous.
Awesome to see those guys brought back in. I mean, I remember when that episode aired originally, and all of the hype, everything was, yeah, this was fun. It was interesting. It was good to see him connect with the living force and everything, but it's just a filler episode. That is my biggest pet peeve, folks. There is no such thing as a filler episode in Star Wars, okay? This just proved it again. And I tell you, I love seeing them come back in. And it definitely made it interesting.
Go ahead. No, then. It definitely... And you know, the filler thing, I get what you're saying. That episode, it didn't necessarily stand out to me as far as the episode, but what happened in the episode I found important because of Ezra and his connectivity with the Purrgils. But I think one reason this episode should stand out for people is because it shows something organic that can go into hyperspace. And that is still not really been explored, though we see it with the Lothwolves a little bit. But I think that's pretty important, and we see why here. I have a feeling this isn't the last of the Purrgils, but really, they're kind of like Vader. They should be used sparingly, and they have more impact.
Oh, absolutely. And they had quite an impact. I mean, they literally are taking out Star Destroyers. They're ramming them. They're crashing them. And, I mean, the fleet is falling at this point. And the big Purrgil, of course, comes right up alongside of the Chimera and is kind of peeking in the bridge. And you could see it in its eye. It's kind of focused on Thrawn, which was just absolutely chilling. I mean, it had its sights on Thrawn. And Thrawn looks at him and goes, you know, what happens next happens to both of us. And Ezra just, without missing a beat, just looks at him and goes, that's the idea. Oh, chilling. David, what were your thoughts when he said that?
Oh my gosh. it's just, I think of two heavyweight boxers going back and forth, you know, as they're trying to get all the, you know, get that Protocol 13 done, they all get in there and Thrawn's like, ha ha ha, that's what I wanted. And now I can shoot down onto the city of, capital city of Lothal and not hurt any of my soldiers. And then, here comes Ezra with his plan for the Purrgils. And then, you know, Thrawn's like, well, you know, it's going to affect you too. And then here's the next shot by Ezra saying, yeah, that's the plan. And I'm just thinking, just like I mentioned a few minutes ago, if you're Thrawn, how can you strategically prepare for Purrgils in your attack of Lothal? You can't enter that into any equation, just like the Bendu at the end of last season. So, and some level, you know, Thrawn in his head has got to be thinking, you got to be kidding me. This is unreal. And, but I thought it was just fantastic with them coming in. In fact, Carrie Beck addressed that issue of filler, Aaron. I thought about you when I was watching Rebels Recon, and she mentioned the very thing you said, some of the squawking by people complaining about filler episodes. And so she had a big smile on her face, showing she that it did. Was, right? Remember that? She had a big
smile. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
I guarantee it was just as big as mine when she said it.
Well, I also want to go on the record as saying I'm glad it was Purrgils and not Puffer Pigs.
Oh, my gosh.
Although they might be effective, too, if they were big enough.
Yeah, that would have been funny. I will say that. You see a bunch of Puffer Pigs bouncing around a Star Destroyer.
I'm so glad that didn't happen.
Yeah, I'll go on record and say I'm glad that didn't happen either. So definitely glad it wasn't Puffer Pigs, but the Purrgils definitely came in. Their tentacles break through the windows. They tie up Thrawn. Then we see stormtroopers coming in to try to get the Ezra. Ezra kind of shoves them away. And then apparently at some point Thrawn got loose and we see Thrawn shoot Ezra. He takes that direct hit in the shoulder. But it doesn't stop Ezra. He turns around, he force pushes him right back into the mix of tentacles that ties him up again. Then he turns around and closes the blast doors because more troopers are coming. And of course, Sabine is like, you know, gets on the comm. She's like, the Purrgils, are those your idea? And he goes, yeah, what do you think? Cool, huh? It's like, she's like, you know, you could have told us. And he goes, but then it wouldn't have been a surprise. You know, he still has that banter with them, even though, you know, it's a life or death situation. Everybody's fighting at this point. And that's when we see the Purrgils start they start getting that glow about them again. We see the glow start building up, which means one thing, that they're about to go into hyperspace. And which is, of course, with Ezra still on there, it's not a good thing. And eventually Thrawn, they're telling him to get out of there. Hera's just like, you got to get out of there. And he's like, don't worry, this is how it needs to be. remember the Force will be with you. And then all of a sudden the Purgils just light up and boom. The Chimera is gone. Thrawn is gone. Ezra is gone. They're just completely gone at that point. And, you know, there's always been that discussion from the beginning, you know, with Luke, with Yoda saying, you know, when I'm gone, last of the Jedi you will be. With Kanan and Ezra still being here at that point, where do we go at this point? I mean, we have Kanan did die, but there's, you know, even I said, I've been guilty of saying, you know, he has to die to fulfill what he said. And Filoni found a way to, you know, somehow keep him alive. I mean, we don't know where he is. We don't know what's going on. He did confirm in Rebels Recon that Thrawn and Ezra are both alive somewhere. He said he's got some theories where, but he doesn't know where yet. When it comes to
Dave loves that. He loves to play with the spoiler. I think that's pretty fun, actually.
I love it. And Dan, knowing that Ezra's out there somewhere and seeing how he sacrificed himself to get Thrawn out of the way so the crew could complete the mission, which was, of course, launch the dome and blow it up with all the Imperials in it. What was your feeling behind his ultimate sacrifice at that point?
I loved it. I thought it was beautiful and poignant and important and completely was. I want all these characters to have exclamation points at the end of their arcs. And this was a beautiful one that I didn't expect. I always want to be surprised when I watch anything Star Wars or read anything Star Wars. And it was lovely, and especially because he learned so much from Kanan, and that was replete throughout this section with this complete episode anyway. And it doesn't make me sad. With Kanan, like Kanan's death in the moment made me sad, but only because I love that character so much. But I was also very happy because that is how it had to be. I don't shed any tears for that kind of thing because that makes for a much, much more powerful story. And Dave Filoni is an absolute master storyteller, but the ultimate master storyteller probably is William Shakespeare. And he understood that for real weight, some characters have to die, but not in a meaningless way just to do it, but to have gravitas. And Ezra disappearing, because I didn't think he was dead necessarily, but I like that they took him basically off the board, as they did with Ahsoka, because otherwise, if they're in, then, you know, then you've got some real problems with the New Hope and the Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. It also, by the way, helps us to see that for as powerful and dangerous as the Emperor is, he's not omniscient. He's not omnipotent. He does have some limitations, and he gets pretty distracted with the Rebels and the Rebellion and Luke Skywalker and, of course, what happens with Vader anyway. So it makes sense that he's not pursuing them. Or maybe he is. Maybe that'll be a future thing, but wonderful.
It truly was. And during that scene when the Purgil have the Chimera tied up and the tentacles have Thrawn tied up and he's saying pretty much his goodbye to the crew, did you notice it's almost like time is standing still almost? You see the glass from the shattered glass from the windows of the bridge almost just floating in air around Ezra at that point. It's just, everything is just, this is my Star Trek reference for the night. In Star Trek Insurrection, they have the ability, they're on that specific planet and they have the abilities kind of, it was slow time down to take in the moment. And you just kind of see everything from the drips of water to the wind and everything, it just comes to almost a standstill. It's almost happening this way in this scene here. And I love it because he's just got his hands up toward the blast door that he just closed. He's got his hand toward Thrawn, and it's just that glass is just kind of floating there around, almost like the Force has it suspended. Did anybody else notice that? just out of curiosity.
The glass being suspended, right, Aaron?
Yeah.
All that, yeah. It's really showing the force power of Ezra. And like you said, I totally had the feels there. I was like, oh, when he says, may the force be with you, oh, I'm tearing up as he says it. Because you know what's coming next. Something's going to happen. Either he dies or, like, what ends up happening, he shoots across the universe someplace.
Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. What an excellent way to have a last line. I mean, what could be a better line than that in a Star Wars adventure from a Jedi? I mean, in this, he's a Jedi Knight. I mean, he didn't necessarily go through an official trial, but he did when you look at this. He's a Jedi Knight, and when we see Ezra again, and I'm sure that we will, I bet you that's going to be addressed.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely will be addressed. I'm willing to say these were his trials. He is a Jedi yeah. Knight. I mean, it definitely, there's no doubt in my mind at this point that he's a Jedi. Now, after it's all said and done, of course, we see the Imperial ship take off. Our crew escapes aboard the Ghost. The ship blows up. The dome ship explodes. And the people of Lothal are, of course, rejoicing. It's a party in the city, in Capital City. Price, of course, goes down with the ship. Even after given the option to escape with the Rebel crew, she opts to go down with the ship. She knows her time's done. And we see her pass away at that point. It all ends, and we get this probably the most moving part of the episode, right at the end, where we hear, and it's being told by Sabine, as basically time goes on. She basically gives this epilogue at this point, where it's like, you know, the attack we were expecting for retaliation from the Empire, it never came. And then she starts saying what happened to everybody else, and how it happens. And she talks about how Hera fought at the Battle of Endor with Captain Rex. They were both on it, both at Endor, battling. Of course, that has re-energized the theory that the trooper on Endor was Rex, but for all we know, Rex could have been up in orbit in a spaceship. We don't know. But Rex and Hera fought at the Battle of Endor and survived. And we see that. We find out that the Zeb Kallus story will continue as Zeb takes Kallus to Lyra San and shows Kallus that he did not destroy all of the Lasat like he thought he did, and that the Lasat people are still thriving, and they even accept him in as one of their own, and which is very cool to see. The bromance continues. Then we go to Hera, who's of course flying around still with Chopper in the Ghost. And we find out that there has been an addition to the crew of the Ghost, Spectre 7, named Jason Syndulla. Jason Syndulla. And of course, the way I love how Sabine puts it, you know, he loves to fly like his mother. And, well, as for his father, you know how he was. I don't know about you guys, that caught me way out of left field, with Hera and having
absolutely Ezra. Absolutely
that was you know, that just that confirmed, you know, everybody knew Hera and Kanan loved each other. I mean, there was that was well established, but obviously, you know, they have a kid now. So apparently for these last few episodes, Hera's been pregnant, and we just did not know it. So, but cute little kid. I'm still trying to figure out where the green hair came from, because Hera doesn't have any hair that we, And Kanan's definitely
she's
not
green.
Well, she is green.
So that's got to be how they show the connection there.
Okay.
You know, she's not going to grow a Laku.
Brown Laku hair, huh? Interesting. Yeah, I want to see what happens to this kid. You know, and I like how they named him Jason too. They actually spelled it J-A-C-E-N, just like Jason Solo from the expanded universe. So I can't wait to see. I would love to hear what happened to this kid as he grows up. Does he have any of his father's force powers? If he's force sensitive or anything, can you imagine having a force sensitive kid that has piloting skills of Hera? Ooh, watch out, First Order.
Sounds like Anakin Skywalker.
Ooh.
Of course, it's not. An anachronism. But you know, a Jedi that's an amazing pilot. They set this up so beautifully, and I'm glad that you said that you laid it out for us, because the last few minutes, basically the epilogue, because they fast forward quite a bit in time, mm-hmm. which is wonderful because it means there's a lot more story to tell. But I don't know how some people felt about it, but I felt sincere, real resolution. Dave addressed a lot of things that we were going to ask and question and talk about, and he just put it out there for us. It's nice to get – I like questions more than answers, but once in a while it's nice to get some answers, and we had to wait 4 years for them.
Yes.
And it was worth the wait. The revelation of Kanan and Hera having a child, that threw me too. I was like, what's going on here? And I forgot about sort of the passage of time, and I was a little bit thrown. And I thought, wow. Now, I don't need consummation to show me that someone loves one another, and I don't think any of us on this show do. But what I do like about this is that it shows life. These two, their relationship was about supporting each other and building each other up and making each other the best version of themselves, balancing the other out, and it brought life into the world. And that is so beautiful, because that's like an actual concrete symbol of the love the two have. And Hera's joy and seeing her relax. The animation, this is so incredible, because Hera did look relaxed and at peace in a way that we've really never seen before. And of course, this is after the Empire's destroyed, and she did it. She helped. She was an integral part of it. It was just so lovely. And we haven't even talked about Ahsoka yet.
Oh, no, not yet. I was about to go right into that, because we then see, after we get introduced to Jason Syndulla, we go to Sabine, and we see an older Sabine, a grown-up Sabine, with a new color hair, different hairstyle, very short, newly painted armor. Matter of fact, I always say that wrong. The owl thing. I want to say a convoy. It's not a convoy.
Convoy.
Jeez, I did it again. So what Dan said, she replaced that with a Purgil on one shoulder, and of course the Alliance logo on the other, with this newly painted armor, and it's looks awesome. Everything Sabine does is just incredible when it comes to her artistic ability. And she goes into the speech how, you know, I thought Ezra wanted me to, was depending on me to protect Lothal. But I realize now that there's more than that. And about that time, we see the ship land behind her, and there she is, Ahsoka Tano. Older, of course, older, probably a lot wiser. And I'm sorry, she was dressed like Gandalf.
She was dressed like Luke from The Last Jedi.
She looked more like Gandalf to me. But yeah, you're right. I could see Luke. I could see that Luke from The Last Jedi in there. But she came out with that gray cloak, that staff. And Sabine's like, you know, now we have to go find Ezra. And her and Ahsoka take off, and that's it. That's where the series ends. They're going off to find Ezra. He's out there somewhere, and we got to find him. And that's where this series ends. It's she says, we got to go find him. It's time to bring him home. And it ends. And what a way to end the episode. You know, I was sitting in the theater with David at Celebration Orlando when Dave changed his shirt from Ahsoka Lives ! To Ahsoka Lives! ! And that was, you know, caught it right off the bat when it happened. But this, just knowing he had this in his mind at that point, it just blows me away. Ahsoka Tano has been just a huge part of the Star Wars universe since the Clone Wars, and to have her involved in this in season two, and now here at the end of the episode, and knowing that she has a future past the end of Rebels, is mind blowing, and it's going to be her and Sabine looking for Ezra. David, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I think about is just keeping all the options open. Filoni's done that. I thought about that when we were talking about Jason Syndulla. One of the things I think about is the young boy that's force sensitive at the end of The Last Jedi, Tamari Blagg, right? B-L-A-G-G. And I think about Jason Syndulla, and, you know, I think about all the stories that can happen there. Are these going to be the new young people of the force? Ahsoka Tano not dying. Like you said, I remember being there in that room. I think, Dan, you were in there too. You were over a ways from us, but I thought you were in the room as well. And I was sitting right next to Aaron and Jason Brain, and Aaron caught it first. Aaron said, look, you know, and I'm like, holy crow, man, you've got good eyes. And saw it immediately. And so what I think about is what you've talked about many times, Dan, is this issue of story. And Dave Filoni clearly leaves his options open. And my mind is just whirling when it comes to all the stories that could be told with this Jason Syndulla, Ahsoka Tano, obviously, to continue her stories. And, you know, with Ezra and Thrawn, they've left those options open. I think they ended it in a great way, but left options open for it. And I'm so excited to see Ahsoka at the end. My jaw was on the floor. But there's so many options, so many ways to tell these stories. And it's now I'm really curious about what Dave's working on in terms of an animated series. But the well is so full. And I mentioned it before, the creativity is there, and they have so many options, so many ways to go. And how can you not be excited? I mean, if you're not excited, you don't have a pulse.
If you're not excited, you're not invited.
Absolutely. Oh, I like that.
I like that. That's good. I like that. So, and with that's the show, man. That's how Rebels ends at that point. Let's go right into final thoughts and everything. I know, and Dan, we'll start with you for the finale. What are your final takeaways and final thoughts on the end of this series finale?
I think the long-term ramifications of this will be long gestating. I don't think we're going to see immediately like a series about where these characters go or what happened. I mean, then we might. I'd be totally stoked, incredibly stoked about that. But I feel like this is something that they've got that they can, you know, spring on us later, and it will just be deliriously happy, because this was a beautiful, important finale. It hit everything that I ever could have dreamed in my wildest dreams, because I didn't know what to expect. I was concerned about the fate of the characters, but then when Kanan sacrificed himself, I thought, I think everybody else is safe now. I think everybody else is safe for the rest of the series, because otherwise Kanan's sacrifice doesn't mean as much. And what these characters did in the one of the great themes of Star Wars is family. And they specifically address family. Ezra does that at the beginning of you know, this episode, and it was just really, really nice to see these characters that we didn't know 4 years ago. They mean so much to us, and Dave got to give the finale that we wish we could have had something similar in Clone Wars, and we didn't get that. He was able to do that here, and it exceeded all my expectations. And I can't stop thinking about the last two scenes, you know, knowing that Rex was at the Battle of Endor and that Hera was there, which we already knew from Forces of Destiny anyway. And it just was great. Now, I sort of thought they would tie more directly into Rogue One, and that didn't really happen, of course, at all. But, I mean, I was happy. I was so happy, and I'm babbling now because it's very late. But it was wonderful. I finales, like I said, usually leave me a little empty, but this one made me feel very full and very, very happy. No, there was no sadness. I'm glad that this series ended because stories need to have a beginning, middle, and end. And this had the ending that we deserved.
It definitely had the ending we deserved, had the ending we all deserved. And to me, it couldn't have gotten more perfect than this. I mean, seeing how this ended, it makes me quite wonder, scratch my head, if Dave would have had the opportunity, imagine how good the finale of Clone Wars could have been. Not that it wasn't good, but just imagine if he'd got to do it in his time frame the way he wanted. It would have just, I can't imagine. I mean, to me, this finale hit home in more ways than we can count. It's going to be something that we will all be talking about for years to come, the ramifications of this series. It was awesome. It definitely is going to be missed for sure. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, it was just, to me, it was just perfect. And of course, don't know if you saw it during the final credits of the episode.
But we finally
found out who voiced Chopper. Dave Filoni was the voice of Chopper.
Were either of you surprised by that?
No, I wasn't. I've always expected it was. And it was funny too, because I read an article earlier today and he was talking about how he got to voice Chopper. And he said they actually had other people come in to do Chopper, voice Chopper, and they weren't getting it just right. And he's like, no, he's got to be a lovable jerk like this. And he did it. He just kind of became Chopper at that point. And he's like, it's a lovable jerk. You know, my wife says I'm a lovable jerk, so it fits. So Filoni as Chopper was just perfect. And of course the joke was made about Celebration Anaheim when he told the little girl who Chopper was.
That's right.
And she never told anybody. And then, of course, the joke was made. It was probably because she was just disappointed to find out the truth. but, you know, kudos to Filoni for that. I love Chopper. He's my favorite. But we need to get things wrapped up here. We've gone over final thoughts. Let's go into your overall grade for this series finale. Overall, including this portion that we just reviewed, the first portion, all of it together as an overall finale. What is your, how would you grade it? Dan, how about you, sir?
I mean, if we're doing it from what we talked about on Coffee with Kenobi Show 112, that complicates things a little bit because of averages. But I mean, it was an A+. It was everything I said before, just wonderful, dynamic, and important. Everyone had arcs that were resolved, and sometimes that doesn't happen, and I thought it was great. Home run all the way.
Excellent. David, how about you, my friend?
Oh, yeah. It matches Twilight of the Apprentice from season 2. It's an A+. No question, no hesitation on that. Just a little side note that I want to mention to you guys, and Aaron, I think you mentioned this in the last Rebels reaction with Jay Krebs. was the issue of Hera's monologue that all three of us heard last year at Star Wars Celebration Orlando. And, you know, I think you and I both thought that that would be in an episode. I was waiting for it, but they put Sabine in as the monologue. And so just a little side note that they didn't put that in, and it was so beautifully done. It was very awe-inspiring, but also very nerve-wracking when I first heard Hera say that before that sneak preview in Orlando. But again, overall, A+, incredible end of the series, and so impressed.
Very good, very good. And you're right, we didn't hear that speech from Hera. It was, but I like how they ended this even better. I have to agree with you. We're going to go 3-for-3 on this. This was an A+ for me. If I could give it an A++, I would. This was, I can't think of a more perfect way to end this series. This has been, and I don't know about y'all, but for me, this I've been extremely passionate about Rebels. I love Rebels. I've loved everything about this show. The character growth. I mean, even the secondary characters, Callus and Ketsu, and of course Hondo coming back, and Rex. I mean, I care just as much about those characters as I did the main crew, and just seeing how they developed those characters over time as well. Callus did just as much growth as some of the main crew did. So to have that much depth into the series just was awesome for me, and I absolutely loved it. So definitely an A+, and if there's such thing as an A++, it's an A++++++. So awesome episode. We did get a quick email, which I'm going to bring up real quick, because we got an email from Andy Billiard, who basically says, the first thing that comes to mind after watching this finale is, wow. Because I went into the episode almost with a certainty that many of our Ghost crew were going to be goners. Obviously, I'm excited, as many of the people in the Star Wars community are, that we don't have to end many of our beloved characters. The finale gave us closure on a lot of different topics, and it also left us with many questions about the future that hopefully the story team will elaborate on in the future. Well said. I mean, it basically encapsulates everything that we've been talking about. And I do want to send a quick congratulations to Andy, because if y'all were on Twitter, y'all on Monday night after the finale aired on finished on the East Coast, I posted on Twitter that we were doing our last final giveaway for reactions. Had the awesome Kanan Ezra Padawan Hot Wheel car, and I actually have a Chopper action figure from Disney that they were selling at Celebration. I had an extra one, and I was going to give those away. Andy, my friend, you just won it. I'll be in contact with you. Congratulations. It's been awesome. If somebody wants to continue talking Star Wars with you, Dan, what's the best way to do that?
Star Wars, talking about Star Wars. I do like to do that. You can find me, of course, at coffeewithkenobi.com, where we have our weekly show. And then you can find my writing on StarWars.com and IGN. And I just released, or I should say IGN just released the other day, my look at why Rebels is so important to Star Wars canon. So please check that out. And we also, of course, are on YouTube and Facebook and Instagram. And we're doing a lot of exciting things with our Patreon page as well. So be sure to check it out.
Perfect, perfect. David, how about you?
Yeah, I'm at Twitter. I'm always around there, always at all the Coffee with Kenobi sites, commenting and making my little fun comments about needing to watch all, needing to listen to all these episodes. So on Twitter, I'm David_Modders. Very simple. Last name is M-O-D-D-E-R-S.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And of course, Rebels Reactions. Of course, the series may be over, but Rebels Reactions will still be there for you. Because if you're like me, you're going to go back and watch the episodes over and over again. Definitely subscribe to our iTunes feed. You can get download all the episodes through there. You can still tweet us at Rebels Reactions. That will still be live. And of course, if you want to contact me directly, at TAHarris121079 on Twitter, or of course you can always email me aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. Of course, we do the, it's been quite a ride, everybody. It's definitely been fun. Dan, David, again, thank you both so much for joining me on this final review episode. I haven't told Dan this yet, but there will be one more episode of Reactions before we hang up the microphone. I'm going to be basically just doing a series recap, basically just talking about how the episode has, or the series has influenced not only me, but influenced the saga. And we want your feedback on that too. So if you want to be involved in that episode, if you want to send us your thoughts on Rebels and how it's affected you and affected your fandom, email us rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com and give us your input for that. I'll probably be doing that in the next week or two once I've overcome from the emotion of the series ending. So, gentlemen.
I was hoping you would do some sort of a retrospective for sure, and I hate to cut you off, but I just want to jump in really quickly and say, again, thank you so much for taking Rebels Reactions, and I knew it would be in good hands, but you elevated it to something that's must listen if you're a fan of Star Wars Rebels. So thank you for putting your whole heart and soul into this, and I can tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this is not the last we have heard of Aaron Harris on the Coffee with Kenobi Network.
Well, I appreciate it, Dan. I appreciate it. This is, I can't thank you enough for the trust you and Corey put in me with taking over the show, and I have had more fun than I can ever explain. I've enjoyed every moment of every episode. I've gotten to record, I got to communicate with a lot of great people, make a lot of new friends, and I look forward to what the future has in store for us, my friend. Absolutely. So thank you very much for that. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Oh my goodness, for sure. Happy to do it.
I mean, you got me tearing up right now, so, so this is huge. So
that's why we love you, man.
Love y'all. Love you guys too. I mean, y'all are great. And love everybody out there listening. I mean, I've done this for you guys. Show's been for y'all. As much fun I had doing it, you know, we wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't for all of our listeners. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in each week to Rebels Reactions during the season. It's been quite a ride with you guys. Y'all made us y'all even went to bat and voted us the top TV review show for the 2017 Podcast Awards.
That's right.
So we definitely have, it's been quite a ride with each and every one of you. And if I had the opportunity to message each and every listener, I would, but I don't have that kind of time, unfortunately. But from the depths of my heart, thank you all so much for listening. And it has been my pleasure coming in, and it's been my honor to have been invited into your iPods and earphones each week to review these shows. And we got one more to go, and we will do that, and I will make my goodbyes permanent at that point. But for now, gentlemen, Dan, David, thank you so much for reviewing this series finale with us. Thank you to Craig and Tom, who were on the Coffee with Kenobi main show with us, reviewing the first half of the episode. Great discussion, gentlemen. Remember, everybody, even though the show's over, this is the Rebels podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
What?
If
you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.